And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
And Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, while Ezra grapples with the news about his parents, the Rebels make plans with Senator Bail Organa, a.k.a. Padme's baby daddy, to secure the three much-needed cruisers. Leading the mission is an agent, handpicked by the Senator, his daughter, Leia. There will be Princess Leia, Imperial Leia, Friend Leia, and did I mention Leia? We're talking about a princess on Lothal this week. How you doing, Krius?
Not bad.
Usually when I write that, like, there will be, like, I have very firm moments in my head about what to write there. And, like, this time I was like, all I can think about is Leia. So I was like, many faces of Leia. Type.
I think Leia in this episode is, like, kind of, like, she's closer in age to Padme than when we saw her in Star Wars.
It depends on, I would say closer in age to Phantom Menace Padme.
I'm thinking she's like 17, 18 in this, maybe,
no,
right?
No, Leia is 2 days younger than Ezra, so she's 15.
Leia's 15 in this.
Yes, because she's, she was born a few days after Ezra, and Ezra's 15. Because Ezra born on Empire Day, and Luke and Leia were born a couple days later. Which I have a note about that, because here are two 15-year-olds who are completely different with different levels on different storylines.
These Star Wars, have a note about that. Star Wars women get into politics early.
I know. I read somewhere that, like, Padme was in, like, politics at, like, 9 or something. Like, she was, like, in junior politics courses or something.
Well, yeah, but that was, yeah. But that's more of, like, you're going to inherit the throne type of thing, so.
Oh no, but she doesn't come from a royal family. It's an election. You're elected to the throne.
Oh, that's right. Well, yeah, but they know if she's potentially going to get elected, it's probably going to be at whatever tender age that they elect.
Leia's a little bit different too. Because, like, her dad's a senator, and he's also in charge of the rebellion, so he was probably, like, kind of prepping her from a young age.
Yeah.
I haven't read Princess of Alderaan, but Princess of Alderaan is, like, pre-Rebels Leia as a kid growing up on Alderaan and, like, learning about this stuff. But I hear it's really good, but I haven't read Princess of Alderaan yet. So, how you doing, Chris?
Not bad.
I got a thing from Dario that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I got a package in the mail. Now, there's too much stuff for me to really go over, so I'm only going to go over the Star Wars stuff in here. So I got a Star Wars Aliens and Creature postcard book that's really neat. It's like the postcards, but the book has, the covers of the book are like see-through plastic, and they're screwed down. So you can unscrew it, pull the postcard out and screw it back in without, you know, tearing off part of the paper or anything.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Keeping it intact. Whatever. That's partial. I'm going from least coolest to coolest.
Well, I thought that was cool.
Oh yeah. Oh, they're all cool. It's Star Wars, so it's all cool. But I'm just saying, it gets cooler. We got a little Burger King, I believe it's a Burger King giveaway. Yep. Of a Jawa. And I have a couple of these, but now I have a trio of them, so I can sit them up on my desk of where he squeezes his belly and his eyes light up. I got a little C-3PO from The Force Awakens. It's just a little plastic figurine, but when he's sort of cut off at butt level, and if you look into his butt, you can see a little picture of him from the movie. I got it probably about, yeah. You literally do look into his butt.
That's amazing.
Look deep into C-3PO's butt. I've got a
There's a joke there somewhere, and I'm blanking so hard.
It makes its own joke. Just add water, it makes its own gravy. I got a probably about a 6-inch tall R2-D2 beanbag. And then I've got a little tiny, smaller, probably like 4-inch tall Darth Vader beanbag with a Batman, little round Batman sticker, Batman symbol sticker on the back of his head. I've got a little, a wind up Yoda that does a backflip with an oddly human face. A big keychain of like a Lego Darth Vader. A little tiny keychain that's just sort of like the First Order on one side and then the New Republic on the other side. A little tiny, hear him? He winding him up. A little wind up Grievy with a lightsaber in each hand, and both hands are just like, imagine like when somebody runs and they just like pump their arms up and down. That's what he's doing with his... It looks like he's almost got drumsticks in his hands, and you could put him behind a little drum set.
Oh.
And then, here's the best. This is from a lot of this stuff is from Dario's son, Keldon. And this is the best one. Inside of a plastic baggie, like, like a Ziploc... It's like a Ziploc bag, but it's like a long, thin Ziploc bag. Mm-hmm. And so it looks almost like a piece of evidence. And it's all it says in marker is Dirty Yoda. And then there's a teeny tiny little dirty. He's all dirty. He needs to be washed really bad. He's beat up. But he's probably like less than an inch tall Dirty Yoda in an evidence bag.
That's
so
wonderful.
How's that? And that's just the Star Wars stuff. I'll be going over some of the other booty in other podcasts. And on our Two True Freaks page, I'll probably post some pictures on the Cantina because I got some fun stuff.
Oh, that's so cool.
Thanks, Dario. Thanks, Keldon.
Did I talk about the swag I've gotten recently from Lipsticks and Lightsabers and Alphabet Squadron? Did I talk about that?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. So I pre-ordered Alphabet Squadron, which is the new book. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. But when you pre-ordered it, they sent you a patch of the Alphabet Squadron. So it's the Rebel Alliance symbol, and it has their 5 ships on it. And I'm assuming in Erebus it says Alphabet Squadron, because that's what I'm assuming the Erebus says. And then I talked about this a little bit last week. I was on Lipstick and Lightsabers. And Shannon sent me 2 buttons from them, and it's their symbol. Their symbol is a profile view of a woman putting on lipstick, and they sent me one of Leia and one of Padme. So I was really excited that for that. She was like, well, you want buttons since you're on our show? And I was like, yeah, I'll take buttons.
Is it a lightsaber with a lipstick on it, or is it a lipstick thing with a lightsaber coming out of it?
No, it's just lipstick.
They should make it a lightsaber, and then they cover their whole name in the graphic image.
Well, no,
well I don't know if you make it. I would make the handle of it a lightsaber, and then the part going onto the lips lipstick, because if it was the other way around, that would be
They do have, like, that is the bigger image as their logo, where the handle is a lightsaber and it's lipstick, but it's their normal logo is Leia putting on lipstick. And then they sent me that one and one of Padme as well. So I was very excited about that. Like, they have an image of, like, Ahsoka, Sinara from Resistance, all sorts of things. So.
What about Yoda?
No, you're not a lady.
Yoda can put on lipstick.
Yoda can put on lipstick. But I don't know. You know, you can request it. really want
Maybe Yoda will have to write in. Yeah. Start a letter campaign till they get a restraining order on him.
Well, it sounded like you had a cool week of getting swag.
Yeah. I just got it probably. I got the box probably like 20 minutes before we started recording.
That's so cool. So you had like gifts today. It was gift day.
Yep, I knew they were coming. I was recording with Dario yesterday, and he's like, they should be there tomorrow. And sure enough,
Old faithful
USPS.
Well, I've been doing good. I've been continuing my discovery of new podcasts, and I found a new one that I really, really, really love. Because, like, if you guys don't know, I started on the network with a show called Hope of All Trades, where I just wanted to talk about fandoms, and it's not around anymore because I don't have time. But I found a new Star Wars podcast called Lousy Beautiful Town. Is that right? Yeah, Lousy Beautiful Town. And it's ran by Abby and Jess. And one of them is helped create the Star Wars Representation Matters movement. And what I like about Lousy Beautiful Town is they talk Star Wars, but they talk like about fandom issues. And so it's not like discussing like movies or TV shows and stuff like that. They talk about like actual fandom stuff. Like their second episode was discussing online harassment and like how to handle it and stuff. And it was really interesting. The one I listened to, well, finished listening to today. Let me pull this out so I don't mess up this person's name. Pulling it up now. They had on Dr. Annalise Ophelion, and she is working on creating the documentary Looking for Leia that's going to be out this fall. And they had her on, and it was just an amazing episode. The episode is called Deep Stuff, But Also Porn. And I can't recommend that episode enough because in an hour and a half, they talked about the queer fandom of Star Wars, the gentrification of queer communities, corporations monetizing Pride Month. And then they go on to talk about ships and problematic ships and how to handle problematic ships. And they were talking about Reylo. And they were talking about how, like, in the concept of story, because they started with talking about, like, how people, you know, like villains. And, like, why are certain villains, like Anakin, considered redeemable, but while other people, like Tarkin, is not considered redeemable. And they started talking about, like, the hotness factor and stuff like that and how that plays an effect. Why certain villains are redeemable and others. And then they go into talking about problematic ships and talking about the concept of story, like how we each and everybody like consumes stories differently. And everybody's, the way people consume stories and view like characters and stuff like that, everyone is correct. But when it is being applied to each other in the real world and stuff like that, that's where it becomes problematic. And so they were talking about like Reylo and that ship. And they were saying how like one person might take like inspiration from like the Reylo fandom and like love these characters and stuff like that, while another person might look at Reylo and see an abusive relationship. And both are correct, even though there are totally different viewings of this ship. But both sides are correct in how they view it because that's how we consume story. And so it was a really fascinating conversation. And I really enjoyed this podcast so much. It's called Lousy Beautiful Town because they're discussing like fandom. Like I haven't listened to the episode yet, but they have an entire episode about dealing with like self-care and mental health through the story of Luke Skywalker. And I can't wait to listen to the episode because it sounds fascinating. And so I will say it's probably not for everybody. I'm gonna say it's not for everybody because it's
not for everybody, but you know what? It's free.
It's so free. It might be.
You can check it out whether you like it or not.
But I absolutely love it. Like their tagline is screaming about Star Wars and putting our fists through walls. And like just these webinars are so brilliant. It was really interesting when they're talking about queer stuff today too, because they were talking about, like I said, they were talking about the gentrification of queer fandom, especially the Star Wars fandom, and how like cis white gays are becoming the face of fandom, but if you're not cisgendered or white, like, people's voices are being lost. And that was an interesting conversation, because the one queer woman on the show is white, and the one straight woman on the show is black, and they were having this discussion of, like, a cis white woman and a person of color discussing this idea. So they had, like, really good questions about it from each other and stuff like that, as they were bouncing off each other. Meanwhile, Dr. Annalise was just, like, enjoying the conversation and putting in her input, and she's so brilliant. She's a psychologist, and she's just offering, like, these, like, really deep insights to, like, the psychology of fandom. So, like, I just was having a fucking field day listening to this episode. It was so good. I shared it with, like, 12 people today. I was like, you need to listen to this episode. So yeah, I discovered Lousy Beautiful Town, so I can't recommend it enough. I've been really enjoying that podcast.
We were talking about it before the show, and I was hoping you were going to bring up say the same term that you said, people shitting on each other's ships.
Yeah.
So stop ship shitting.
Yeah.
No ship shitting.
They were talking about, like, the idea of ship wars, and, like, why do we even have ship wars? Because people can consume media how they want. Like, they brought up, like, one of them were talking about how she jokingly brought up a rare pair from Alphabet Squadron. And she was like, yeah, I shipped this person with Luke Skywalker. And then somebody came back to her and, like, started harassing her for that. And she was like, why can't I just enjoy the thing that's silly that wasn't supposed to be taken seriously?
Right, yeah. Why do you even care? It's not the point to find the one true ship, you know. It's like, one person isn't going to come up with the one true ship and then put it all to bed, you know. That's not the reason it's being done.
Because Dr. Annalise was actually talking about, like, the way, because she had problems with the Raylo fandom, not the fandom, but with the Raylo ship, not the fandom. She flat out said, I love Raylos, they're the nicest people with beautiful artwork. But she was, like, having trouble with that ship because she just didn't see what other people were saying. So she was like, this is what I did. I sat down one night and I pulled up Archive of Our Own and I just read a ton of Raylo porn. And she was like, it was interesting because, by the way, men, I'm talking to men, if you want to know what a woman likes, read fan fiction, because fan fiction is prominently written by women. That's what we want, because we write what we want to see. Read fan fiction.
Yeah. Or read porn written, any kind of porn written by women. Or I'm probably not going to get this right, because it's been so long since I read this book, but I think it's called, I know there's a children's book called The Secret Garden, so it might be like My Secret Garden or Women's Secret Garden or something like that. It's basically just transcribed women talking about their fantasies. And
interesting.
It's an eye-opener. And it's highly disturbing, you know. And it also pretty much, like, that's the thing is, like, well, you know, I mean, like you were just saying, people write their ships for different reasons. But a lot of them, since their sexual stories are for sexual reasons. So something that gets you going sexually doesn't necessarily, it's in the fantasy realm. It's not necessarily going to, you know, line up as if it was a real relationship or something. Maybe somebody just really gets hot at the idea of Kylo Ren and Rey getting it on, and wants to write a horny story about it. And that's, you know, and if they write their story and it's what they like, it's successful, you know?
Yeah.
They're not being commissioned by...
I'm not talking about, like, romance novels, because the romance genre has a very strict formula. So even when women write romance novels, they're staying within the formula. Fan fiction is so differently because it's, like, creator-generated. Like, people are writing what they want. They're not having to follow, like, formulas and stuff like that.
Right.
And so, like, Dr. Annalise was talking about how, like, it was very eye-opening seeing how women were writing Kylo Ren. And she was like, it made me understand this ship that I saw problems with. And she was like, it's still not my thing. But she was like, I understand it a lot better when I see how other people handled the character and how they viewed the character. So it was a really fascinating conversation.
And these conversations have been, these are evolving. These conversations pretty much, I think I would have to say they started with Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk.
They brought that up. They were talking about Star Trek fandom and how women carried fan fiction through the Star Wars. I think to almost quote verbatim and Dr. Angley, she was like, fan fiction goes back as women writing fan fiction goes back to Spock.
Fan fiction and slash fiction both sort of came from women really wanting to see Spock and, well, you know, a lot of the fan fiction wasn't like even like sexual, it was like romantic, but they liked the idea of those two getting together.
Yeah. So I can't suggest Lousy Beautiful Town enough. If you want really good discussions of fandom within the Star Wars realm, because I don't think there are enough discussions about fandom in general. Because we can talk about the movies and everything all day, but like, it's really hard they were talking about that in the episode too. It's really hard to sit down on Twitter and have a discussion with 280 characters when you can sit down and have a discussion like person to person and have like really talk about like the depths of fandom.
Did that, like those kind of podcasts are like the catnip to me. So I'm probably going to check this podcast out.
I would say start with episode 13, which is called Deep Stuff, But Also Porn, because that's like, I just finished listening to that today, so it's like really fresh in my mind. Uh-huh. I really enjoyed that episode where they were talking about like the queer community, the history of Pride, and also then went on to talking about like Shiv and like and all that. So I also have to give them props because you know how we call Palpatine Papa Palps?
Yeah.
They call him Papa Palpy. So they talk a lot like us too. Like they swear, they have like they don't hold back. Like they just tell it as it is, and I like that about them.
I think the guys at Red
Letter episode where they,
The guys at Red Letter Media that do the Mr. Plinkett movies call him Palpy too. I like Poppy. Yeah. I like Poppy or Pappy Palpatine. Either one of them. I like our little variation.
I like Palps because Palps just sounds gross.
Palps does sound gross. It sounds like a growth on your neck.
Yeah, you got the palps on you. Good.
I have to squeeze my palps before I go before the Senate.
Eh. So, Princess on the Fall?
I'm ready.
What? So, I wanted to ask you, you haven't seen this episode before, so what'd you think?
I liked it. It wasn't groundbreaking. I don't really have any issues with Leia, but she didn't really like bowl me over in this one. But their portrayal of her was not inconsistent, and now like it makes a little even more sense. I think we were discussing before the show. She's 15 years old, and around 15 years old in this episode because she's. I thought she was a little bit older than that.
No, but, she's 15. Ezra's actually two to 3 days older than her. That takes out one of my questions. One of my first questions in Act 1 was, I know you haven't seen this episode before. What were your thoughts on Leia?
There you go.
That's my very first question for you.
Damn, man. We're knocking out the notes on this show like nothing.
Well, you ready to get started?
I am.
All right, here we go. A Princess on Lothal is the 27th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on January 20th, 2016. So happy 2016, everyone! It was written by Stephen Melching and directed by Bosco Ng. Some extra information for you. Princess Leia is voiced by Julie Dolan. She's voiced Leia in several video games and in the Freemaker Adventures, and I think Dave Filoni said that she was the voice of Leia on Star Tours, if I remember correctly. I forgot to write it. I watched the Rebel Recon and I forgot to write it down, but I think she's also the voice of Leia on Star Tours.
The Star Tours, I don't know if you've ever been on Star Tours, but the Leia voice is dead accurate on that one.
Yeah, that's her. I have never been on Star Tours, but they had like a little clip of it on Rebels Recon, and I was like, wow. So, like Dave Filoni was saying, like, it sounds like they found lost footage of Leia that they never used. It's so accurate. Julie Dolan's other works include working on the Conan O'Brien shows, Gilmore Girls, and 1985's Twilight Zone. According to Dave Filoni, exactly, I don't know how to talk. According to Dave Filoni, the creative team felt that they had an opportunity to show Leia before she became the leader seen in the original trilogy. As she is a younger character from when the audience first met her, it allowed the team to experiment with her personality before she became more resolute in the original films. One of the challenges of bringing Leia onto the show was that audiences would have to be reminded that she is part of the Empire at this point in her life. And while she believes in the ideals of the Rebellion, she still has to act the part of a loyal Imperial. And they were also talking about, like, it was really, it's always extra difficult to bring live action characters into animation because, for one, you have to put, like, a like Carrie Fisher's Leia into a stylized rebel form and still make it look like Leia. So they were talking about how it's always more challenging when you have a character like Leia or Lando, who's an actual real living person, and bringing them to the show. So that was a very interesting conversation. Leia's outfit is based on concept art by Ralph McQuarrie for A New Hope. And finally, I just wanted to add this in. We haven't seen Lieutenant List since season one in the episode Fight or Flight. And I love this little shit. I love Lieutenant List so much. He's such a little shit. And I especially love him in season three and season four. Actually, I think he's just in season three when Thrawn and Kallus just fucking wrecks him. So I just wanted to give you a reminder of who Lieutenant List is. So way back in Fight or Flight, Ezra's old friends, Mr. and Mrs. Sumar, had a farm and burned down
E-I-E-I-O.
Yeah. List captured the Sumars and burned down their farm, and Zeb and Ezra saved them after they stole a TIE fighter. So that's where the last time we've seen Lieutenant List. You know who also has a farm? E-I-E-I Yoda.
Yoda.
Sorry, Yoda, I didn't have a good way to transition to you.
It happens.
How are you doing this week, Yoda?
Not bad.
Have you done anything fun this week?
No.
Okay, then that was
No fun this week.
This is the no fun zone.
Yoda's been bad.
Oh, what did you do?
Not telling.
You can't just... Did you, like, do something to Yaddle? When she's
not
dead,
telling.
Did you do something to Yaddle's body since she's dead now?
Yoda will never tell.
We were talking about shitting on ships. Did you shit on Yaddle's grave? I just like to laugh.
There's a few ships Yoda would like to leave little green pellets on.
Ew.
Just like a bunny.
I'm just gonna go on to the question. So
powerful in the force they are.
Our question this week. I'm sorry, I just had the image of, like, because you're talking about Yoda shitting little green pellets and Yoda's so strong in the Force. I just imagine him just like, that's where kryptonite comes from.
No, they just float away like little fairies.
He just shits and it's like nuclear glowing greenness and it's kryptonite.
like little fireflies.
Ugh. Anyway. Our question this week comes from our friend Paul C. Kelly. Ooh, yeah. And also, remember, guys, we're running a little bit low on Yoda questions, so please send them to us. All right. Paul C. Kelly asks, Yoda, have you ever been in a good bar fight? Like, ever get into any quarrels playing sabacc?
Yoda does not play sabacc. Yoda has gotten in fights over Hide the Holocron, though. Many fights. Bar fights, too. Yoda goes to karaoke night. Fights all the time.
I'm laughing at something completely different. You just reminded
People
me of
get
something.
Mad the fifth time Yoda sings Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Hide the Holocron. I mean, it's just... It's an extra pocket, isn't it? Just put it
keep
right
it away
there.
From the dark side. Or maybe the best place to hide it is the dark side.
It's just an extra pocket.
Oh, yes. Reach into Yoda's pocket. Magic trick.
Ace
Windu always ruins karaoke.
Who was the best karaoke singer?
Hmm?
Who is the best karaoke singer?
Yoda. Yoda is the best.
Okay, who is the second Rindu, best?
Stinky. Only sings country music.
I just imagine Mace Windu singing Old Town Road now. How was Obi-Wan on karaoke? Was he okay?
Mumbled. Obi-Wan does not enunciate.
And how was Yaddle on karaoke? Did the entire bar stand up and cheer for her?
Yoda does not go to karaoke when Yaddle is there.
Because everyone cheers for her?
No. Not at all.
Well, how do you know if you don't ever go?
I hate Yaddle, too.
Then how would you know if you've never gone and saw her sing?
Word gets around. Windu has loose lips.
I have a feeling.
Talk shit, he likes to.
He likes to shit on ships.
Talk shit and throw wet blankets.
I have a feeling you started the rumors, Yoda.
All out of wet blankets.
Alright, Yoda. Well, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Alright.
And remember, if you have a question for Yoda, you can either send it to us on Twitter, you can leave it on this episode on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, you can message... If you put it on an older episode, just message me and let me know it's there. Or just, like, kind of tag me in the message so I know it's there. That's really helpful, too. But yeah, that's cool, too. I don't remember my email. I think it's hope@twotruefreaks.com. I think. So...
I saw Yoda pulling his Hide the Holocron trip once.
It's just an extra pocket.
It's not pretty. He has a holocron hidden on him. I'm thinking it's more hidden in him. And then he's got a fake holocron, and he tries to get the other Jedi to open it up, which means the real holocron's probably opening up in its hiding place. Yeah, it's a nasty trick. He's been banned from a lot of bars for that.
I was laughing because me and Megan were role playing, and it was Rebel Grand Inquisitor, Cassian Andor, Agent Kallus, and my character on a mission together. And my character was joking around how vaginas were just extra pockets, and that's where she in the past she's hidden stuff there. She's totally joking, but like all the other guys were just like, "Oh my god!" But yeah, I was laughing because I was literally just talking about that like yesterday.
I've known women who've used boobs for extra pockets, so
boobs are the best extra pockets.
See, like,
Yeah, boobs are amazing pockets. They're amazing.
Another thing, guys, I have a housemate who ran a clothing store, so I pick up some women's clothing facts here and there. This is something guys don't know. Women's pants have tiny, teeny, tiny pockets in them.
God, yes.
Teeny, tiny, shitty pockets. That's why a lot of times women will buy men's pants, because then you can actually have real pockets. My housemate just tears the pockets out of them, puts new real size pockets, and they're the same pants but with less pockets, and they cost more money. So,
do you want to know my anger about pants?
Men, you should be outraged about this. Women, go buy men's stuff. It's the same with shoes. If you're buying sneakers, go find the men's version of the sneaker and just find the size that fits you and buy it, and it costs less. So.
My thing about women's pants is, because the problem with women buying men's pants is men, when silhouetted, are more straight and we have hips, which makes us more rounded.
Right.
So men's pants don't always fit over our hips.
Yeah,
and this is my thing. Like I don't understand why like men's pants have two sizes for length and width, like waist length and then length of leg, when women have like more curves. Like, so we should have the width of our hips.
Like four measurements in those pants, yeah.
Because, like, that's my problem. Like, I have wide hips, but I'm relatively short. So I usually have to get bigger sizes just so they'll fit over my hips. But those pants are almost always too long on me. Because, and I don't know why we have, like, single numbers like 12s. When we need, like, the width of our hips and the length of our fucking legs. Women's clothing is stupid. And, like, a 12 at one store is a completely different size from a 12 in another store. It depends on who's making them.
We've gone from using our influence to try to affect the next Star Wars movie to now we're trying to influence the clothing industry. I think we'll be harder on this one. I think we have less clothing industry insiders tuning in right now. But if you are listening in, listen up.
Yeah, make women's sizes and like have two sizes: the width of the hips and the length of the legs. That's what it fucking should be.
And give them pockets, you cheap bastards.
You ready to get into Act One?
I am.
All right, hold on. Okay, now I'm ready. Act One. Even though that this isn't a two-parter episode, the events of last week are still rolling into this week, so I want to give a quick recap. Last week, Ezra got some dreams about a white loft cat and a mysterious man. Kanan and Ezra went back to Lothal and found them. The dude was Ryder Azadi. I don't know why I'm just, like, pointing at my laptop. I'm just, like, pointing every word at my laptop. You can't see it, but I'm doing it. I'm gonna stop now. The dude was Ryder Azadi, the ex-governor of Lothal, who's a good guy in the TV show, but he's an asshole politician in the Thrawn novel. Ryder knew Ezra's parents and confirmed that they are, in fact, dead. And now Ezra is a sad blueberry. And the B's plot, the side B plot, was the rebels were found out on Garel and had to escape, and now they're still looking for a base. On to this week! We open at Ryder's camp, out in the wilderness, where Space Dad is catching up Space Mom about how Ezra is doing with the dead parents' news. Hera thanks Ryder for supporting Ezra's parents with their podcasts. Hera tells Kanan that Padme's baby daddy, Bail Organa, heard about the rebels losing a bunch of ships on Garel. So he's sending a super special agent with three ships for them to have, aka steal from the Empire, because Bail is a quote-unquote Imperial, quote-unquote. And Kanan hopes that this is what Ezra will need to bounce back on his feet. Out of space, three Hammerhead cruisers arrive in Lothal. Lieutenant List sees them and sends out some ties to identify them. They say that they're on a relief mission from Alderaan with supplies for the people of Lothal. And List is like, Alderaan, they're so goody-two-shoes. Fine, I'll deal with this myself. And the Hammerheads get permission to land, and Leia comes out, looking awesome. Meanwhile, Ezra is a sad Batman when Kanan and Ryder come up to him. Kanan has plans for him and Ezra to dress as stormtroopers and a cadet to sneak onto where the Organa ships will land. And Ezra is rightfully meh about the entire thing. But when Kanan invites Ryder to come along, Ryder declines, not wanting to fight anymore. He's had enough Imperial prisons for a lifetime. Our two heroes get there right when Leia is getting off the ship. Kanan takes off his helmet to introduce himself, and Leia's like, yeah, I know who you are. Now put your helmet back on before you blow this for me, bro. And Ezra's like, whoa, I've had a day, lady, who was also my age. I'm not here for your sass today. And they're put on hold while waiting for Liz to arrive, so the real stormtroopers can look for any illegal stuff on the ships. Leia says everything is going according to plan, and she can't wait for Kanan's team to steal her ships, which Kanan didn't actually know about that part of the plan. But List is arriving, and they have to meet him. And Ezra is not having a good time getting sassed by Leia, but he's fine when Sabine sasses him. So Leia walks up to List and drops a great speech of, I'm here serving the Imperial Senate, and man, do I love the Empire! Those mean, nasty rebels are ruining the lives of the poor people of Lothal. I come with the Empire's great graces to aid them. Yay, Empire. And List is impressed and is much more ready than a normal Imperial because he's heard of the Alderaan ships being targeted by rebels. So he has brought out some ship boots to strap those hammerheads down. He also wants to bring in two walkers to guard Leia's ships. And then List has the audacity to call Leia by Miss. And Leia doesn't miss a beat going, first off, it's your highness. I'm a goddamn princess. And I'm a Disney princess at that. Second, I'm gonna need to take your shuttle since you got all my ships strapped down and stuff. Enlis is flustered, and Leia commands Kanan and Ezra to bring some supplies with them. And they load it up on Enlis' shuttle and zip on out of there. And Kanan is like, well, whoever came up with this plan is dumb. And Leia's like, well, I guess I'm the dumb one because it was my plan. And Ezra's like, I got plans too. Got lots of plans. Like how you should have given us the ships in deep space. But Leia explains that she could lead, that giving them the ships in deep space could lead to Alderaan getting found out. But if the rebels steal the ships from Imperial planets, then Alderaan can't be blamed or called out for treason. Which changes Kanan's tune that this is actually a really good plan. Just then, Chopper calls them. They rush back to camp and see Ryder being arrested by stormtroopers. Bum, bum, bum. I don't know how to fucking read tonight, Chris! This is what happens when I don't write my outlines the same day anymore. What'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it. It was super Ralph McQuarrie looking. And it had, like, there was a really neat shot of a stormtrooper. There was, like, an illustration. You know, the stormtrooper was taking up, I believe, the left side of the screen, just, like, top to bottom. And then you see the three hammerheads landing. It was just a really neat shot. And it's good to see that the hammerheads, those are the ones that they used in Rogue One, right?
Yes. These ones took inspiration from the Knights of the Old Republic game, but they also took inspiration, like Rogue One took inspirations from those too. So they are the similar ships.
My only, I do have one more short note. It's kind of, I thought it was visually neat, but just, I don't think it's realistic to drop the walkers like 70 to 100 feet to the ground and just have them like boom land, you know. Why would you do that when you're that close to the ground? Just lower them down and not risk them tipping over, or if there's a sinkhole under one of its feet and you just drop that heavy thing and it went, you know, you could break its leg, destroy the whole walker. So
that would actually be a hilarious thing of Liss being like, I brought extra security, and they drop them and one falls over and Leia's like, that's cute.
And they tip over like dominoes, you know, it's that just like, why take the risk actually and put the strain on a piece of material? But visually it looked really cool. And my only other notes is a little more about Leia. I thought, like, it was funny once you mentioned she was a voice in Star Tours, that voice was dead on, just like you described. This one isn't as on the nose, but what you're dealing with, and I think this worked out really good in the Disney way too. It worked out really good in general, but like having her be a younger character, the voice actress pulled back on a lot of the Carrie Fisher mannerisms that we get, which I think came from her being older and more confident and aggressive than, but at the same time, Leia's going to be confident and aggressive either. It's part of her character, but she's a much younger formed version of it and probably not as battle hardened yet.
That's a good point, because there's also a difference between, like, Leia in the original trilogy, like, mouthing off to, like, Vader and Tarkin, and then, which is different from this, where she's trying to be, like, the ideal Imperial. So she's talking to Liss, and she's just like, yes, I'm a princess, yes, ha 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 ha. But I love the shift when he calls her Miss, and she's like, it's your highness. And I'm like, there's Leia right there.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they just put, she just puts little bits of it too, and you know, it's a little, her delivery is even a little different, but she's younger, and you can do more of, I don't know if this makes sense, but like a Disney look and Disney voice on her. She's very Disney animated character in the way she sounds and looks in it, while still sounding like Princess Leia. So it works out good in that sense. I mean, and she visually, her design, much better than, say, Yoda, really fits into this one really smoothly.
Yeah.
So I thought they pulled it off really well. I thought it worked really well. It was not like seeing someone do an impression of Leia, you know. And which is good. It's that they were thinking more of what would her character be like instead of just hammering it home to people that this is Princess Leia. You know, she talks just like her. She moves just like her, you know. And I like that about the Filoni team.
Yeah.
But that's all I got.
My first note is, my first question for you is, what do you think of Leia? So you've already answered that.
Well, there you go.
I like List calling Leia ships another meddling delegation from Alderaan, because I can only just imagine that this is like how Barrel Organa works. Like, you know, then they even talk about that, like, you know, rebel ships are like Alderaanian ships are always being stolen by the rebels. And I really like that this is kind of like what he does. And I like the idea of like, this is the politics coming into the military operation, you know, like someone going, we need to overstep this military thing because we're bringing relief aid. And I like that kind of clash of politics and military, which it goes into my follow-up note. In all honesty, Bail's really smart about how he's doing this rebel thing, because, and we're also seeing it through Leia here too, because they both have to pose as Imperials. And actually, there was a little snippet, I think it was the Ahsoka novel, where Bail was talking about, yeah, it was, and I think if I remember correctly, Ahsoka was like, are you afraid the Empire's going to find out about your family? And he's like, no, I use that. People know I'm a family man, which means I'm going to put people first. Mm-hmm. And well, they expect me to be a people person and put people first because I'm a family man. And I think just Bail is just so smart in how he handles his rebel side of things. About, he poses as a great Imperial, but he's not any different from who he was in the Clone Wars.
Right. And you have these people like Mon Mothma and Bail Organa that were already there in the power structure.
Yeah.
And you have the rebel, and then you have the part of the rebellion that is, you know, founding on the outside of the government, which is just, you know, the people on the ground, like the, you know, the ghost crew. So, but, you know, we're in that rare period. I mean, literally this period ends in about, I would say, 45 minutes into episode 4, you know, when they're like, we've dissolved the Senate and, you know, we don't have to worry about any of that, basically that Bail Organa bullshit anymore, you know. So they have a few years where they can operate on the inside and be secret enough to, you know, there's probably a level where they can get away with stuff freely, and then things start getting a little paranoid and they're looking for the subversives and suspecting them, and, you know, they probably have to just do it as long as they can until they have to whip out and then be on the outskirts with the other rebels.
Which is what, like, we see actually later in the show when Mon Mothma makes that stand. I can't remember
Mon
if it's season 3.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it's season 3 or season 4, but there is an episode where Mon Mothma's like, "Welp, I guess I'm out of the Senate now. Fuck yeah, rebellion!" And like, but you know that Bail Organa still is working within that, because we see that in the original trilogy when Leia's doing the exact same thing to Darth Vader. She's just like, I'm here on a Senate relief mission. And he's like, no, you're bullshitting.
Yeah, we're not playing that bullshit anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. So my next note is, I definitely remembered Ryder fighting later in the series, but I totally absolutely forgot that he didn't want to initially get back into the fight. And honestly, I don't blame him. He just got out of jail. And so I like that kind of like little turn of his character, because I completely forgot about that.
I started, like, all the stuff that skeeved me out of him in the last episode was gone in this one. His character didn't kind of skeeve me out in this one. I like this character a lot better in this episode.
Yeah. And I talked about this a little bit. I mentioned that I had this note. So something I really like about this episode is we have two characters who are the exact same age doing completely different things, because Ezra and Leia are both 15 years old. And they actually kind of both have like a little bit different maturity levels, but in different ways. Like, Ezra's very mature when he needs to be, but he's still very much a kid, because he's grown up like as this like orphan Aladdin kind of character type. So he had like all these kind of like, he didn't have any structure, so he just kind of like did his own thing. compared to someone like Leia, who was raised as a princess. She was in a very structured society. She had these like rules that she had to follow. I'm assuming, but also
she's a princess, so she's had to learn to wield power. You know, there's certain for being in a powerful princess, prince and princess family type thing. You have some power with your title.
It's interesting because Ezra's learning how to wield power differently, though. There are two very different power structures. Yeah. But, like, I haven't read Leia, Princess of Alderaan, so I don't have that background. But I'm assuming that Bail Organa probably prepped her at a young age about the Rebellion and doing stuff like this, because he would have had to do something to trust his 15-year-old daughter to do this kind of shit.
I'll bet she, like, sort of, like, kicked ass in school, but then they probably tried to send her down normal princess training, and she was too much of a tomboy because she liked going to do some sort of outdoor activity with her dad and was kind of a tomboy. So she was like, yeah. And after a while he was like, you know what? Guerrilla warfare might be something she might be into later on in life.
Yeah. So I find it this episode very differently because here are two 15-year-olds who are on two different paths, both still working for the Rebellion. One's doing like the more military side of the Rebellion. One's doing more the political side of the Rebellion. And I just find their stories very compelling because Leia and Ezra are the exact same age, but they're completely different on completely different levels, but on two separate paths, but they're working together. I just love the whole concept of that story because I think that's just a very interesting take on what these teenagers are helping carry this big ass rebellion. And that's a lot of pressure for a 15-year-old to do.
Well, you know,
which we'll see later in the episode.
Yeah, and I'll go into it later on, but like really like dialogue wise and things that happen, not, you know, they have a couple like lines back and forth, but you know, there's not a lot of overt stuff going between them, but just by the fact of what age they are and how they meet and stuff like that, you know, they like want to flirt with each other, or they're like, oh, checking each other out. But they're both 15 and they're both also embroiled in the, you know, important rebel work. So they never get a chance to like flirt or have like real cute moments or anything like that, like they would probably like to. And they don't really. That's something that's just so subtle that I picked up, or maybe I just like projected it because I remember being 15 years old and I would be like, oh, I think she was hot, but I would like talk to her, but I wouldn't even know how to flirt at that point, you know. And Ezra obviously doesn't know how to flirt, and he doesn't have like, and when he does flirt, it's not like when they're shooting, getting shot at, it's when they're just on downtime and he can really afford to just crash and burn. So I thought they handled it really well. It was just barely there, you know, which is, I think, how it really would be, you know, of just like two kids, even not even like maybe even wanting to flirt with each other, but they probably would because they're both pubos. But just seeing someone new the same age is pretty exciting when you're 15 years old. And they got something in common. They hate the Empire.
I actually have a note about that in Act 2. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about it now. So I remember when this episode aired, and it's still kind of like is here and there in the Rebels fandom. You'll see the art pop up or the occasional fanfic pop up. But when this episode aired, there's a lot of people who started shipping Leia and Ezra together. And like, it wasn't like a very big ship, but there was a lot of fan art of them together and like fan art of, and like fanfics of like them going on other missions together, which kind of like bummed me out a little bit because this is her only appearance in the entire show. And I kind of wish Leia came back one more time somewhere in the series just to kind of like form that friendship a little bit more, at least. I think that could have been a really cool story to like revisit again, or at least having like, just something like that. But I do remember when this episode came out, like people were like shipping Ezra and Leia together.
Yeah, no.
Which I actually like the ship more than I like the Ezra Sabine ship. Because in my head, like Ezra and Sabine are like brother and sister. But I like this one because, like, I don't see Leia and Ezra as a brother and sister. They play off each other so well. Because Ezra's, I don't want to say he's a Han Solo type, but he is that kind of, like, roguish type, kind of like Han. So I that kind of made more sense to me, while Sabine and him are more like brother and sister in my head.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they probably didn't want to. I think they want to use, like, characters like Leia as little as possible. I mean, you could probably do more with, say, Lando, like, yeah. fleshing out his relationships with the people in Rebels. Whereas Leia, you almost just want them to sort of just have bumped into each other and had their one adventure and gone on, so that it doesn't muck up stuff in the future, you know, with Leia. Because once she starts figuring out too much stuff, and she's also chock full of midichlorians and hanging out with two Jedi or two Force users. So then there's that, and it, you know, there would be the temptation for the writers to maybe have Leia be like, well, I got a funny little sound in my head when those two walked by, you know, sort of like when Ezra first saw Kanan. So, you know, I'm glad that they just kept it light and airy, but it wasn't free of any kind of, you know, I like that they weren't like totally like, oh, let's bicker with, you know, bickering with each other or anything. They get along, but they have a couple little things. It's very natural feeling.
Yeah. That would be funny though, if like there was a moment where Leia's just like, why am I hearing a woo 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 in my head?
And he's like, you hear it too?
Kanan's like, wow, yeah. I'm not touching that one. My only other note is, like, in later seasons, Kallus and Thrawn eat List alive. Because List is just so dumb. Lieutenant List is so dumb, and I love him in later seasons because he's just a big old dumb guy. He's a super eager Imperial. He's just like, I can do that because I want to impress the Grand Admiral. And Kallus is like, okay, I'm gonna set you up to fail. So I remember List in later seasons just being this like really dumb guy. But I actually forgot, like, in the scenes that he's actually kind of smart. He was like, oh, it's Alderaan, and they get their ships stolen, so let me boot them. And I was like, that's actually kind of a smart thing, Liz. You were smart at some point before Thrawn and Kallus destroyed you.
I was
so proud of him. I was just like, yay, Liz.
It practically protects the ships, and at the same time, it's kind of hostile to, you know, the Alderaan envoy, which is a sort of, you know, that's a good Imperial dominance, you know, protocol. So yeah, but that's what he's smart in, is maybe like military protocol and stuff like that. But like human nature and figuring out what's going on with live, you know, ongoing events, not so much with him.
Yeah. But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 2.
All right. Act 2. Kanan, Ezra, and Leia head out to meet the troopers who have captured Ryder and Chopper. Kanan's trying to bullshit his way through, but the troopers have orders to kill Ryder immediately. And Leia, hold on. Oh. And Leia definitely put on... sorry. And Leia definitely put on her political pants this morning, because she marches right up to the trooper and, well, actually is the guy, demand to know what Ryder did. And as the trooper is explaining, Hera arrives on the ghost and she starts shooting up the place. Kanan's next. I'm so sorry, I just like burped up the pizza I had for dinner and it was so gross. You can leave with that. You can leave with that. I just like burped up like a mouthful of pizza. Oh, Pizza Hut, you're so good on the way down, but not on the way up. Oh, I need a drink. I'm going to take some antacids later. Anyway, Kanan's... You can leave all that in if you want to. Or you can cut it out, I don't care. Kanan snags Ryder while Chopper goes to get the Phantom. Kanan thinks on his feet and tells Ryder to, quote-unquote, take Leia hostage so they can escape together. Ryder grabs Leia and runs for Zeb, telling the Lasat, which stormtrooper Kanan and Ezra are, and to make it look good. And Zeb, my precious baby boy, gets an evil smile on his face, remembering every time Kanan and Ezra has ever fucked with him. And Zeb knocks them both out cold on their asses and drags them onto the ship. And the Ghost and the Phantom minivan fly away to safety. Well, needless to say, Kanan and Ezra are pissed off at Zeb, who just laughs it off, because Zeb is just there to have a great time, guys. Ryder thanks Hera for saving her life, while Leia watches Sabine and Zeb comfort Ezra about his parents' death. And Leia asks what happened, and Kanan sort of tells her. And he says it's hard for someone his age to cope with all this rebellion stuff. And Leia is like, yeah, I know, I'm 15 too. And so, with Kanan's encouragement, she goes to talk to Ezra. And they both wonder if this rebellion is even worth it when the people they love are dying. And Ezra points out that she's a princess. She doesn't have to fight. And that's why Leia wants to fight. Because she can, for those who can't. And this is a little boost that Ezra needs as he's ready to get back up and continue fighting. They all meet up in the common room area to figure out a plan of attack to rescue Leia's ships. And they're all pretty stumped from Lyst's defenses. That's really hard to say. Lyst's. There's a lot of S's. Lyst's defenses on the ships. But Leia's like, you guys turn those frowns upside down because I believe in you. I don't want to hear another can't. We need some cans here now. And they start forming a plan. Ezra and Kanan still have their disguises so they can get back on the base. The Ghost will be air support. Ryder and Sabine will take apart the gravity locks that's booting the ships. And Ryder's not happy about fighting, but if it gets him off Lothal, he'll do it this one time. You know, until later seasons. Meanwhile, in all of this, someone tells Lyst that Leia was captured, and poor Lyst is the lovable dumb guy from season 4 again, and I love him, and he's panicking. What'd you think of Act 2?
I liked it. I just find it hilarious in this episode when I like fully realize it's like, oh my god, the Empire has to not only has to sort of protect Leia, they got to kiss her ass a little bit, so like all of a sudden they have to be really concerned with her, and the leverage that gives her is just hilarious. So it's just a great, I love that aspect of the story in this context. You know, it's a great wrinkle that takes advantage of her, of where she would have been in this time period, and it works really well.
That's the thing, like, she's not just like any person from the Senate, she's a princess. and that's actually kind of something I really like about her, which I'll talk about in a second. Like, Leia is using her privilege to help the rebellion, which is very interesting. Actually, I'll go ahead and talk about my note now. Leia is using her privilege. Like, she is a princess, and she is owning it, and she is using that princess status to exert herself. And actually, like, Leia reminded me a lot of Kaz from Resistance. Because both of them come from very privileged families. They both have money. They grew up in comfort. They have a very snazzy way of life. And when Leia was talking about, like, she has all this privilege, so that's why she fights for people who doesn't have that, it actually reminded me of Kaz. Because it took some Kaz all of season 1 to really get to that point, because we saw him in the first half of the show, like, really struggling not having money and, like, not having that privilege. But as he got to know the people in the Colossus, and he got to be like seeing them as families, and the Colossus became his home, he really started seeing kind of the Leia side of things. He was like, I am here for these people, these blue colored people that I can help, even though I am this rich boy. I can help these group of people because I care about these people. So like this, like Leia, a lot of this and how she used her privilege and stuff like that really reminded me a lot of Kaz from Resistance.
And Leia's headed for the same sort of trauma that Kaz got, but just later on in her life.
I really want that in season 2. I really want Leia and Kaz to have a conversation, because she is literally probably the only person in the galaxy who understands what Kaz is going through right now.
One of the few.
Oh my god. But even if it's just like a scene where she's like, I understand, and I'm here for you. And he's like, really? She's like, yeah, I lost Alderaan. And he's like, I love you. I love you, Aunt Leia. And just like hugs him. I will cry.
Well, I think Leia's differs from Kaz in this one, and it's more Leia-like, where she takes a little bit of, like, extra sadistic pleasure in it. And she makes him sweat. She purposely, like, doesn't just, like, you know, say, you have to protect me. She makes him sweat for their reputation and is like, yeah, and I'm taking your ship, too. You know, so she's enjoying being a jerk to him, and it's fun to watch.
It is, because I think that that's a huge difference between them, is that Leia was raised to be this fighter against the Empire. Kaz just kind of stumbled onto it. He was just like, because to him, he was, there was two things about it. Like, there was one point where in the first episode, and it's fresh on my mind because I was listening to Sky Talkers, and I'm going through Sky Talkers' run of Resistance right now. And they were, so it's really fresh in my mind. And Kaz in the beginning was just like, cool, the Resistance is like a club, and this is fun. I'm going to do these, like, cool spy things. And then, like, he kind of, when he saw firsthand how the First Order was infiltrating the Colossus, that's when he kind of stopped and went, oh, I need to actually do something.
Yeah, I'm like, Leia, it kind of like, came raised, home.
yeah, like, Kaz stumbled into it, and then he saw firsthand how the Resistance was hurting the people he loved. I'm like, Leia, who was raised to be a rebel.
Right,
Kaz just kind of, like, thought he was joining a cool club, and then the war found him. So, like, they're very similar characters, but they're very different as well, and that's why I really like the similarities and the differences between Kaz and Leia. Because I've always thought that Kaz was a lot like Leia in many ways, but he's also very different in many ways, too.
I agree.
But that's continue with your
notes. That's all I got for Act 2.
Okay. I have a little note, and then I have one other. I guess it's a big note. My next note is the entire time Leia is on the Ghost, where she's either when she was talking to Ezra about why she fights to when she's like telling the Ghost, like the Ghost crew, like, I've heard of you guys. I know what you can do. I don't want to hear how we can't do this. I want to know how we will do this.
Well, everybody's got Ezra's speech has gotten passed probably around through everybody in the rebellion. Somebody's heard a tape of it or something, you know?
Yeah. And, like, between, like, the whole time Leia's on the Ghost, that to me felt most like original trilogy Leia. Like, that whole kind of segment that where she was talking to Ezra to when she was encouraging the Ghost crew to figure out a plan. Like, that, to me, felt the most original trilogy Leia of the entire episode.
Ezra's like a meme. He's viral, man. He went space viral.
Yeah. And my only other note is there's just so many interesting layers to the Rebellion in this episode. Like, the Ghost crew is more of the military layer, and, like, that's a lot like what we see in the movies. But Leia's the political layer, and every single action, I just find it fascinating that every single action she does has to be seen as an Imperial. Like, with them trying to escape, like, she can't just run to the Ghost, because then she'd be a traitor. Ryder has to take her. And it's just those, like, little things that are very so interesting, how she has to have this facade. And we'll see that in Act 3. Like, there's a point where two people see her pick up a gun, and she has to kill those two troopers because they see her get a gun and shoot at them. And so I just find it all very fascinating how Imperial she has to act. And her almost every action out of her mouth, except for when she's on the Ghost and she can be herself, is, how can I be Imperial in this scene? And it's just really fascinating to watch.
These transitional time periods are really good sources for stories. Like they sort of, the transitions themselves sort of get handled by the movies, you know? Like, the first trilogy is like the Republic going to the Empire, and then the Empire getting defeated, and then that going to the First Order, you know? But in that in-between period where these TV shows live, that's really good, where things are sort of either or, neither or nor of either one. You know, the Clone Wars was just when it was just about to turn to the Empire, but it was, you know, it didn't just, like, flip a switch, you know. Maybe Anakin more flipped a switch in the movie, but, you know, it was when Phantom Menace started out, things weren't going good. So you have that really interesting time period in Clone Wars, and now you have sort of the same sort of period, but it's just past when the Empire took over. But there's still a lot of life left to the old infrastructure and power structure that's still sort of going along and fueling the rebellion before it gets stomped out. So there's just so much story potential in those weird little time periods, and you don't have to hunt. And those are the points where the movies aren't covering anything. So it's great.
It's the gray area of yes, but also. And what I mean by yes, but also means yes, Leia is a rebel, but also she has to be an Imperial. Yes.
Right. And she's actually going to have to do Imperial things. You know what I mean? Maybe not the evil stuff, but
It's like the Jedi Order in Clone Wars.
Just business as usual, which is supporting the Empire at the same time. So you have to like do a fine line of like, am I, you know, I have to make sure I'm subverting more than I'm propping up.
And we see that gray area during Clone Wars. Like, yes, the Jedi are supposed to be peacekeepers, but also now they're generals in a war. Yes, they're supposed to be the good guys, but also they need to do these war things.
And in a way, they were assassins, although they didn't know it. But, you know, Palpatine manipulating them was basically just using them as sort of a way to assassinate themselves.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah. Yes, but also is a very, very interesting kind of story time. It's a very gray area, which is it's like Saul Guerrera. Yes, he's a rebel, but also a terrorist. So it's very interesting. But that's all I have for activities. Do you have anything else?
No, let's polish this baby off.
Cool. Act 3?
Act 3.
The rebels move in to set their plan in action. Leia, Kanan, and Ezra arrive in the Phantom minivan to distract List and the guards while Ryder, Sabine, and Chopper start working on the ship boots. And Leia is hamming it up like, you should promote this guy, points at Kanan, because he was brave and he saved me from those nasty rebels. Where were you, List? And List is flustered and starts sweating. And Sabine gets the first ship free and hops inside. And as she's taking off, List's men start shooting at Riders, so she fires back, which signals the walkers to move in. But Hera is there to protect her back, taking out one of the walkers. Kanan punches out List while Ezra spider monkey jumps on a guy and beast mode punches out all of his feelings the last few episodes into the guy's face. But they still have another walker to deal with. Kanan moves in and lights up his lightsaber. Ryder watches in awe, realizing that Kanan is a Jedi. Kanan hops up and takes out the legs of the walkers, but another one is there to shoot at them. And Leia is like, whoa, a Jedi! I've heard of these guys! And Ezra, seeing an opportunity to impress a pretty lady, uses the Force to rip guns out of a couple troopers' hands. And Leia picks one up and kills two guys, both to protect them and probably to hide her secret since they saw her. Kanan hops on the second freed ship and takes off. A tank arrives, and Leia pulls out the rich princess powers and stalls the tanks, captained by yelling, oh my god! These rebels are stealing my ship! You guys have some explaining to do! OMG! Exclamation point! The last walker is proving a lot of trouble, so Ryder hops on the third hammerhead cruiser and uses the exhaust to literally blow the walker over. Might be my favorite thing ever to watch, because I've never seen a walker just get blown over, and I loved it. And Ezra and Chopper head to hop onto the ship, and Leia goes to Ezra. For half a second, it looks like it's going to be a sweet moment. But Leia grabs Ezra and struggles with him. To make it look good, Ezra stuns Leia and hops on board. And List is like, oh no! No, the princess! This is awful! The princess is shot! I'm gonna get fired! And he goes over to Leia and helps her up. And again, Leia goes full princess going, I'm gonna have someone's fucking head for this! Fucking head! List, your fucking head's on a platter now! Fucking head on my gold-ass platter from Alderaan! I need my daddy! full princess, I love it. And Liss smooths it over the best he can, but fails miserably, and Leia just smiles at him. Back with the Rebel fleet, Ryder decides to head back to Lothal. Something is stirring there, and he wants to continue to fight for the planet, you know, for later seasons. The end!
Something is stirring on Lothal.
Yep. What'd you get for Act 3?
I just think it's really fun how they just repeatedly, over and over, like someone picking on the most gullible kid in elementary school, just bullshit the Empire, or, you know, mostly List is the most, is the crux. He's the linchpin of just, like, interpreting what's going on. But
I,
like,
absolutely love Lieutenant List so much.
It's he's lucky so he's dumb. So dumb, because they just, like, every step of the way, every time the plot twists, they're just like, all right, they readjust and set up another bullshit scenario for him to deal with. And it's also a scenario that's just designed to fucking put his blood pressure through the roof.
And so, like, I love Lieutenant List because he's, like, cute dumb. Like, he's like, all gold star, you tried, kind
well,
of
he's
dumb.
Not,
like, you would give him a gold sticker. Like,
yeah, he's
tried.
Not cute dumb in the same way as, like, Roger, Roger. Oh, no. I got up on the wrong side of the bed today.
But he's kind of like the kid that you're like, oh, you tried. Here's your participation trophy. Gold star. Kind of dumb.
He's he's just like their luckiest break. They should love him because he's just like, you can run roughshod over him.
You see why Kallus and Thrawn were able to, like, eat him alive in season 3. Because
yeah.
He tries so hard to a fault. And that's the thing.
Yeah,
like,
no,
he's at a fault. He's at a fault trying too hard.
He's just not even in the same strata, near the same strata as Thrawn, so he's just dog meat. But my only other two notes is I like the, well, it's one note and it's a two-part note. I like seeing Jedi in a Stormtrooper suit with a lightsaber is always cool to see. The two AT-AT destructions, one of them was really cool, and I thought it was plausible, and it's also something, they're both something we've never seen before, but this one was using the engine of a ship to just blow the AT-AT over, you know, with
I laughed so hard
with
I
the
was
exhaust
like,
of,
course.
Of a ship, because you very rarely see the exhaust of a ship having any effect on anything in Star Wars. Sometimes there's people sort of standing around when a ship will take off with exhaust going, but this, they just give it a blast, and it's, you see that it has enough power to just tip it over. But the other one where Kanan cuts through its leg, not buying it. Not buying that you can, that the way he did, like, I'm guessing, like, when you see them go through a floor, it's one thing, you know, it's just like a floor level, but when they go through like a blast shield door or something like that, they gotta like get it in there and like slowly work it around, you know, they have to sort of heat it up and melt it and weaken it that way, and flying through the air and then just like slicing through it, for one, it's probably thicker than a lightsaber, two, just, yeah, it seems like you might just sort of, like, get stuck in it, like, a few feet into it, you know, and then have to just sort of, like, slowly, like, maybe let gravity pull you down and cut it, which would look really cool, too. But just sort of, like, it's almost like a Samurai Jack sort of thing, you know, or a Tartakovsky sort of thing, where they just fly by and slash the leg out. And the way the leg collapses is really cool, and it's really cool to look at, but the physics of it didn't seem to fly with me in relation to other lightsaber physics we've seen. I would have had him start at the top and just sort of like drag down on it and had the leg just sort of fall into half, or like halfway down the structural integrity of it gives out and it just sort of collapses to one side.
Yeah. But I feel like that goes into like The example that's coming to my mind is Roll to Fail, which is a podcast I listen to. And Sean was our guest a few weeks ago. So hi again, Sean. They have a rule which is like where they flub rules if it's a cool idea. And that's how I kind of feel like this was. Like, it's a cool idea. So they'll flub the rules on cool ideas.
See, that's the thing is I think they could have stuck with the cool idea with the rule. I'm the visual guy. So every once in a while, usually the visual guy is just going like, I really like this and this. Because there's not very often that it's like, I don't like those visuals, you know, unless it's something like Yoda. But this was one that I think they could have, like, I think it would have really been cool to see him fly through the air and then just sort of stick his lightsaber into it and use his weight to slow, you know. At first slowly, but maybe gaining a little speed as the metal was getting hotter and melting ahead of itself. But minor quibble. But that's what we're here for, to point stuff out like that. And
I have one of those too.
But that's all I got. So let's get to yours.
I have a tiny nitpick note.
Yes. Pick at it. Pick at that palp.
I'm going to pick up that...
Poke the palp.
That scabby palp.
Yeah, look at that big red palp. Poke it. Ooh, it's like jello.
My little nitpick of is, where do Kanan and Ezra keep their lightsabers in their stormtrooper outfits? Is it like Yoda's Hide the Holocron game?
Oh, reading Yoda's mind you were.
Yeah. Because I was thinking about that. Like, Kanan just has his lightsaber. I was like, where did it come from?
Got that lightsaber hidden. You got that lightsaber keistered, if to use the prison term. You got your lightsaber keistered, and then somebody kicks you in the groin. Ooh, you might turn the right kind of muscle spasm, and you're not going to like the results.
I think Ezra would have an easier time of hiding it, like, because he could put it, like, tuck it into, like, the waistband of his pants, like, on the backside, and have his shirt cover it. Kanan has nowhere to put his lightsaber. Right. Like, it has to be, like, crammed up into his helmet with, like, his face, and, like, the whole time his head's sideways. Like, there's no place for Kanan to put that lightsaber. I mean, it's the tiniest nitpicking thing, but I always think
maybe
about that.
Maybe he's using the Force to just hold it up against his back or something, you know?
Yeah. And I kind of started thinking about that in Stealth Strike when him and Rex are running around as stormtroopers. I was like, I remember first thinking, like, where did Kanan get his lightsaber? But now, like, this time I started really thinking about it. I was like, where was Kanan's lightsaber the entire time?
But then again, a lightsaber might have just a clip, you know, a clip on the side so that you can stick it on a belt or, like, a utility belt like a stormtrooper would have, too. So they might just have an all-purpose clip, too.
Well, the thing is, we know that it has that. And, like, the thing I would have liked to see is that we've seen in season one, Kanan keeps his lightsaber in two pieces, so it doesn't look like a lightsaber. So he could have had those clipped onto his belt, and we could have seen it the entire episode, because it would just look like a thing clipped onto his belt, and then he could put it together and then use it, just like we've seen in season one. But it's not there at all the entire episode until he pulls it out. So I was just like, where did your light? Did you pull that? Literally pull that out of your ass, Kanan? Where is your lightsaber gone? Went to the dark side.
I'm just picturing that scenario and two people fighting with lightsabers, and then they get in where they, you know, they've got their lightsabers pushed up against each other, and their faces real close, and then the other person just going like, "Whoa, one of these lightsabers smells awful."
Yeah. So my big note for this episode was I really went into this thinking that Ryder and Leia knew that Kanan was a Jedi, but this episode showed that neither Ryder nor Leia knew that they were a Jedi. And, like, two parts to that. And the first one was, it really reinforces how much hope to the galaxy that the Jedi do actually hold. And yeah, we give the Jedi Order from the prequels a lot of shit because of the Clone Wars and stuff like that. And the Jedi Order and the Council in particular were really shitty at times. But the Jedi as a whole are essentially good and they're powerful and they bring hope to people. So I really like that moment when, like, you saw the change in Ryder, who didn't want to fight at all. And now seeing a Jedi, he was like, no, I can do this. And
just like Rex.
Yeah. And so, like, it's just pointy it's amazing Rex. How much, like, the tide can turn with a single Jedi, which we saw all throughout Clone Wars. Like,
it also shows, dying and then... it also shows how cellular, like, the Rebels and the Empire are being on information about the Rebellion and Jedi and stuff like that. So basically, like, it ain't getting around through... There's people in the Rebellion that know about Kanan and Ezra. They're not telling anybody. You know, Bail Organa's not telling his daughter.
That's my very next
Nobody's note. Telling anybody. No, don't... Everybody, they're keeping that, like... Every, you know, anything you know is just something you know. Everything's on a need-to-know basis, so you don't tell anybody anything unless you know they already know. And that way... You know, everybody's safer that way. So
that's,
especially
that's my
when
very
you know
next note.
Jedi, but even in the Empire, they're not. It's not getting out from. You know, we heard there were that we heard there were Jedi around because of some intel from the Empire. It's like no, just basically the people who've run into them and seen them with their lightsabers. No, and then the only other people that. You know, Palpatine knows without meeting them, but and Vader probably, but those are the two guys on the at the head of the pyramid, you know.
Yeah, and actually we saw that in season one with Tarkin, because like Tarkin went up to Tua and he was like, Tua, have you ever actually met a Jedi? She's like, well, no, but we heard that they're a Jedi. He's like, there are no Jedi there. Meanwhile, the Grand Inquisitor is standing 2 feet away from him. And Tarkin's right. just sitting there telling Tua, there are no Jedi. Don't tell people there are Jedi. You can't right. tell people there are Jedi. And the Grand Inquisitor is right there. And but like I thought that was very interesting that like it makes sense that Leia doesn't know. Because we know from season one that Bail Organa knows that Kanan is a Jedi. And, like, we know that because he found out from R2, and he even used a Jedi phrase to Kanan. Like, because he knows. And he, like, also knows that Ahsoka's running around. But he didn't tell Leia, and I was like, that's probably the thing to keep her safe. Like, that's for her safety. Because if she knew that there were Jedi in Lothal, that's very dangerous information for her to know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And we're in an early phase where stuff is still under wraps. A lot more, so it's just cool. It's fun to see. It's fun to see it because you can sort of interpolate that would be the way it is, just because we know the story on either side. But it's fun to see it playing out. It's neat.
Yeah, I think my favorite is when Tarkin told that to Tua. He was like, "You haven't seen it with your own eyes, and there are no Jedi, and don't tell people that there are Jedi because it's propaganda." I loved that side of it. My last note is actually a question for you, Chris.
Oh.
Yes. So, which of these three episodes do you think was the best use of original trilogy characters and Rebels? Do you think it was the C-3PO or R2 episode, the Lando episode, or this episode with Leia?
Lando. Easy.
Why?
I think Lando... being the character that he is very interesting, and at the same time, where Lando is in this story and how he figures into the rest of it, you have a lot more freedom to have fun with him and to have him interact with these characters, you know, and it even make you could have stuff that makes a profound impact on Lando's life in this without it making any future continuity that's established wonky. And he's just a fun character. So you can you can treat him almost like a Hondo in the stories. Whereas with C-3PO and R2-D2 and R2-D2 are there. They're literally like the keepers of the story. So if you have too much that happens with them, that's not going to get unnoticed in the context of future movies and stuff. So you only want just a little meeting with them, you know, and stuff like that. The same with Leia. So Lando just has much more potential and is a lot more fun. Plus... Well, I mean, you still have Anthony Daniels, but it's just also awesome that Billy Dee Williams can still do the voice of Lando and have it be totally convincing. So it's neat to have an original actor voice acting it too. So yeah, all around, like, I'm happy with, like, seeing Leia and C-3PO and R2-D2 once in the series, but, like, I could definitely have dealt with Lando being a recurring character.
For me, like, between the three episodes, the Lando one is a very close second, because I think where Lando really succeeds is, at the time, if he came later in season two, I think it would have been problematic, but in season one, where the cell was on their own, they were kind of like these ragtag guys, they were dealing with, like, smugglers and stuff. Like, it worked in season one because they dealt with smugglers and he's a smuggler, and I thought it really fit the theme of season one. I don't think Lando would have worked as well in later seasons because then they were with the rebellion as a whole. What I think the best one to me is this episode. Yeah. And what I like about it is the layers. Because we're so used to seeing the military side of Star Wars with the heroes, like, as they're always fighting and doing these strikes and stuff like that. What I liked about this episode is we got to see the political side, seeing how Leia and essentially also Bail Organa is running the rebellion from their side.
You know,
and
it's funny.
I just find, huh?
It's, well, I totally agree with what you say, but just think of this as a political episode compared to a Clone Wars political episode.
Oh, God.
It's a much different style of political episode. Yeah, that's, I've never even thought about that. You don't get political episodes like in Clone Wars, and not that we universally hated political episodes, but it was just funny hearing you say, well, we're seeing the political side of it. And I'm like, yeah, and there was a lot of shooting and
and running
and
around
fighting.
And
in action,
I think
yeah.
It's more active because a lot of times with political episodes in Clone Wars, they were very passive. Like, you would have, like, the one scene with, like, the shooting, but then the rest of, like, the 22 minutes outside of that, like, 3-minute fight would be, like, politics and talking to us about bills,
right,
and stuff like that.
Politics is just a backdrop of this, you know. It was a frame, yeah. The frame of the story rather than the subject of the story.
Yeah, but we got to see it act. Here with, like, little things that Leia did was, like, I can't run at the ghost, but Ryder can grab me and take me to the ghost. And so I think this showcased it on a better way story-wise, because it's something that we might not see Leia again, but we could possibly, of course, we've seen the show as a whole, so we're not going to happen, but at the time this episode aired, it could have been done again now in the rebellion as a whole. And we kind of see that with Mon Mothma later on, like, where she has to kind of, in the beginning, she was kind of this, like, secret kind of political figure, but before she came out, and she was like, no, we're the rebels, fuck the Empire. So I think the Leia episode actually does a little bit better, but the Lando episode's a very close second, and it's a really good season one episode to kind of, like, capture the rebellion of season one. So Lando is a very, very close second to me, and, like, the C-3PO and R2, like, it was fun to have them there, but they were almost just, like,
they were walk-ons.
Yeah, they could have been.
It was
been
almost
any
like
droid.
The Star Tours ride, you know.
They could have been
here's R2 and 3PO.
They could have been Gonki in the Blood Sisters episode with Sabine and Ketsu. They could have been the Gonk droid. They could have been any droid with intel. It was just special because it was R2 and 3PO. And I think that's the difference. Like, Lando and Leia actually impact the episode that they're in. C-3PO and R2 could have been any droid with intel
running the same thing. Like, even though that the Blood Sisters episode wasn't the most dynamic episode with those two characters, I think if they would have put R2 and 3PO in there, it would have taken all the, you know, attention away from those characters in it. So that's probably, but yeah, you know, they were just sort of like an attraction, I think they worked a lot better in a sort of like Ocean's 11 sort of story.
But we also know that it has impact, because that's how Bail found out about Kanan and Hera and the ghost team.
Well,
so it
every
does
time
have
every time you have R2 involved, it's going to have impact. That's just like his job.
Yeah, so really R2 was the important part of that episode. 3PO was just there for plot.
Oh, 3PO's along for the ride, and he's recording it all, but R2 knows what's going on.
Yeah, so like R2 was the important part of that. 3PO was just there, but that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
I'm ready to score it up.
All right. So score it up for me, Chris.
I thought this was a fun episode. Like, I don't think the Leia stuff in it is nice, but I don't think it's like super deep or like, not that it should be, or, you know, like a super insight into her character, or, you know, it's not foundational in the future of her character, which I'm glad of, you know, I'm glad that it's just a sort of light romp with Princess Leia. But at the same time, they are able to put a lot of, you know, her communicative, like where she is and as a person in the Empire and in the Rebellion. So it plays off that very deftly in the right. This one, as opposed to Blood Sisters, is very well written, and the writing is almost invisible in this. You know, the story and the action, no matter how much you want to try to nitpick on it, it just keeps going forward, and naturally and good flow. But at the same time, it's just sort of, you know, what one of the standard episodes of story-wise. It's not really like a deep character episode or a transition episode as much as they had before. This one was just sort of a standalone show with Leia, even though it's sort of a continuation of last time. But I gave an 8.0. I thought it was just a strong episode, but, you know, I'm keeping seven, like in the 7 to 8 zone for those good, but not story progressing, you know, character story progression shows, which we're going to get a lot more of as the seasons progress, you know.
Yeah.
So 8. Down 0.5 from last week, I think.
I got a question I just thought of that we haven't really talked about yet. Do you think that Leia was, like, because I was thinking about Ezra a little bit while you were talking. So we haven't really talked about Ezra's change from, you know, him dealing with the death of his parents and him reacting to that. And Leia gives him the talk where it's like about the rebels and why she fights and stuff like that. Do you think that Ezra would have gotten back on his feet as fast if Leia wasn't there to talk to him about it?
No, I think it was good. It's always good to have someone you don't know to bounce stuff off, but it was also someone he didn't know that was his own age. There was a girl, and that was in of a similar mindset, and he probably looked up to her a little bit. You know, he probably was just like, oh, she's like, you know, setting it up for us to get 3 ships, you know. He probably respected her quite a bit, so it was probably, she was probably like the ideal person to say something to him. You know, she doesn't have any baggage and they're sort of in similar, they're more similar than either of them can even know, because they're both force wielders, really.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think if Leia wasn't in this episode, because the thing about the space family is the space family loves Ezra, but they also like know him, and I think they would have given him like space and time, and we saw that like with Sabine and Zeb. He was just like, I just need some time, and they let him go off on his own, and he probably would have brooded for like 5 more episodes. But I think having his peer there, having his peer there to kind of give him an outside perspective, who is also fighting the same fight that he's having, I think he bounced back so fast because of Leia. So I completely agree.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
For me, this episode, it's a lot of fun. It's just a fun episode. I got to rediscover a lot of things that I forgot about. I didn't even talk about that. Like, I've only seen this episode once. So when I've forgotten a lot of this episode, so it was really fun rewatching it, because it was kind of like seeing it with new eyes again. And Leia's just great the entire time. I love seeing her play an Imperial in this one. I actually forgot Ryder didn't want to get back into the fight, so I like that he wasn't so gung-ho to get back into the fight in the beginning. But really, this was Leia's one to shine in this, and it's just fun. It's better than a normal episode. My normal episode score is a 7, but I don't think it's quite to the 8 yet. So I gave it a 7.75. Like, you know, 7.9. I don't know. I'm right in between that, like, 7.75 to 8 range, too, because this episode is a really strong one, and I don't quite feel the 8, but it's not a 7.5 or any, so it's kind of like right there in the middle. So
no,
it's a very solid episode. So.
I'm totally right there with you, man.
Yeah, it's a solid episode, but it does nothing groundbreaking. So, well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from both Twitter and Facebook. So consider this a part 2 from last week. So last week, Paul C. Kelly has been sending me updates as he progressed through the Thrawn novel. And we read a lot of them last week in the feedback. And he sent me a few more as he finished the Thrawn novel. And he also commented on our episode where we talked about the Thrawn novel between Clone Wars and Rebels. Talk about an episode that I would love to go back and redo.
Ooh, it sounds like you're getting ready to do my hope voice.
Well, not because, like, I think about that, and, like, if I had to go back and redo some episodes, I would want to definitely redo the Thrawn novel. That was my, like, 3-hour slog where I pretty much just read from Wikipedia for 3 hours. And looking back on it now, I would have really loved to have done that the way I did, like, the Vader comics between the two series, because I think I could have, shortened it a lot. But I think I could have, like, done a lot better, like, explaining it, and wouldn't have been so dry. Because I was listening to that novel, that episode again, knowing that Paul just listened to it. And I was like, oh, God, that's an episode I want back. There's not very many episodes of Two True Freaks that I want back. And that's one I want back to redo. I wish I did that one differently. So, yeah. Anyway, I have them labeled from Twitter and from Facebook.
Yes, okay. And I get to do my cool Paul C. Kelly and bitchy Hope voice back and forth. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Paul C. Hope is trying to, you know, I mean, this is, of course, a friendly conversation on Twitter, but I'm going to turn it into, you know, Hope just, like, condescendingly explaining her point of view to the unflappable Paul C. Kelly.
Have fun with my first sentence, because it's a 4-line long run-on sentence. Have fun.
Nothing will flap Paul C. Kelly. You'll see no flapping here. Paul says, from Twitter, I noticed reading Thrawn. He could totally be a good guy, but it just seems to be on the wrong side. He justifies some of the immoral stuff with logic, and it's kind of evil, I guess. But too bad the rebellion did not get him. Well, he wasn't sent to infiltrate the rebellion. He did seem pretty okay with slaving Wookiees, on the other hand. I know he does that thing in Rebels where he has that guy basically sliced up. So at that point, he is going to get bad guy status. Ha ha! After I like this. This is him just going ha ha. But I'm turning it to a chuckle, evil genius chuckle of derisive laughter. Ha ha! After I send this to you, I just read Thrawn's conversation with Night Swan. Explained a lot. And Hope says,
good luck with this run-on sentence.
You mean the really character game-changing moment that changes his entire character in Rebels? That Thrawn is actually working for the Chiss to either better the Empire or destroy it from the inside? Where it makes you wonder if his failures in Rebels was for the Chiss mission and to try to weaken the Empire. You notice how I didn't say quotes? Because I can just say the quotes.
Failures.
That moment, Paul. Because that was big. That was huge for me. Which is why I'm so excited / scared for Thrawn. Treason next month because it's going to be a Feels Factory. Ooh, the Feels Factory. That sounds like a mall store.
I'm not ready for Thrawn Treason.
That's a blog.
It might be out by the time this episode comes out, but I'm not ready for Thrawn Treason, but I'm so ready. I'm scared, excited for it.
Somebody needs to do the most emotional blog ever called The Feels Factory. The Play-Doh Feels Factory. Still, you should read Thrawn Alliance first, because Karen is awesome in that book. The entire book is hilarious. And there's a new character named Commander Kimud, who I love so much.
Kimud.
Paul says, funny, yeah. I thought about the space whale thing as well. Wondered if that point, this is what caused Thrawn to fail to stop Tarkin from blowing up his homeworld and causing some sort of destruction to it. Price, on the other hand, evil. Ha 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 ha. Just read the bomb part. Or I don't know if he meant he just read the bomb part, or he's saying he's evil. Read the bomb part.
He meant the big character bombshell. Yeah, he just read it.
Hope says, absolutely changes Thrawn's intro scene because Price explains the Battle of Bataan, where she killed everyone and he took credit, and he just looks at her. Price is interesting too. She has every chance to not go evil, but power corrupts, and she chooses her path to become that way after Ryder puts her on it. She's such a villain, and I love how evil she is. Paul says, Zahn still has the best endings. Oh, yeah. First, oh, yeah, of the exchange. Oh, yeah. After we watch seasons 3 and 4 of Rebels 2 now. LOL. And then Hope says, rewatch season 3, then read Thrawn Alliances, then season 4. Like homework. And then from Facebook, Paul C. Kelly says, listening to this right now, I just finished the novel. So you're reading the novel and listening to our show? Do you have like dual processors in your brain, dude? Are you like Gene, the podcasting machine? That's amazing. I like how Chris put it in Revenge of the Sith music, where I think Mace Windu is confronting Palpatine at the part where Price does the most evil thing in the book. Goes along well with Hope's narration. Dude, you're going on like 4 levels here. You're listening to the podcast, reading a story, and extracting the music from the podcast and putting it into the story, man. That's fucking amazing. I like that. I couldn't do listening to a podcast and reading a book at the same time would like be like throwing a piece of a crowbar into my gears. I would just be like, I can't process.
So, I have a suggestion. The Kit Kat Chunky New York.
Chunky New York.
Yeah.
It's like a chunk off the sidewalk.
By the way, Paul, thanks for the feedback.
Yes, so, thank you.
If you don't know what we're doing.
Thank you for putting up with Hope's bitchy attitude, too, Paul.
Hey. Well, if you don't know what we're doing.
Kit Kat Chunky?
It's Kit Kat Chunky New York Cheesecake. Gâteau à fromage.
New York cheesecake. I don't know if I have that one, Hope. I do.
Yeah.
I do. Oh my god. I never noticed this one.
So if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's weird. So our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. So first and foremost, thank you, Dario. We love you. And so this week we have the Kit Kat New York cheesecake. But it's from Sweden! So, thank you, Dario. We love you.
It says cheesecake. Gâteau au fromage, which means cat of cheese.
Does it really?
No, but that's what I'm going with.
French. You could have totally maybe...
I'm sure it's cake of cheese, but...
You could have totally said yes, and I would have believed you, because I don't know French, and then I would have just gone up to my cats and been like, gâteau.
French love cheese cat.
Oh, it smells so good. This is a big ass Kit Kat.
It is. It is chunky.
Oh my god.
It's not as big as like a. It's not as wide as a chunky bar, but.
Oh my god.
Oh,
it doesn't taste like a cheesecake. Well, it kind of does taste like a cheesecake.
It doesn't at first, but then when you start, like, growing... Mm.
Yeah, because the chocolate almost overwhelms the cheesecake at first. So you don't taste the cheesecake right away. You just taste the softness of the cheesecake.
Well, the first bite of it is almost all chocolate. I haven't even really gotten into the wafer yet on mine.
I know. The chocolate's almost, like, overwhelming. But it's really good.
It's rich.
Ooh. It's really rich. I cannot eat this whole thing. But that's so good because cheesecake's like one of my favorite desserts.
Yes.
I could eat cheesecake every day of my life. Actually, my uncle, it's so sweet of him. He always brings a cheesecake to family events because he knows that I love cheesecake and he knows not everybody's going to eat it. So he pretty much buys me a whole cheesecake to take home with me. Mm. It's like,
the New York style?
Yeah, it's a really sweet thing that he does. So, I love you, Uncle.
It's like halfway through it that I'm really tasting the cheesecake a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I can't eat any more of that. It's really rich. Thank you, Dario. We love you. Well, that's all I have for Princess on Lothal. Do you have anything else, Chris?
I do not.
Well, where can people find you?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our podcast headquarters where we put up, where all the shows are posted up. You can subscribe to an RSS feed of all our shows. You can subscribe to individual shows. You can listen to them on the page. Or you can go to iTunes and listen to them and download them. Or whatever the hell iTunes is now. We'll be saying that for the next few weeks. But basically you can still get them off like whatever iTunes app does that, and you can keep up with what's going on with Two True Freaks on either Twitter or Facebook, which you just look up Two True Freaks on Facebook. I am the one who runs that page, but on Twitter, that is the domain of Gene, the dark domain of Twitter, where Gene puts out his dark Two True Freak tweets. Ooh, I transitioned really well. I didn't even mean to transition into the Emperor there.
Well, now
I don't know. This is alarming that I'm doing that.
Now I'm going to say the thing. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Gene.
I have ultimate power. Gene. And also there's a Two True Freaks Cantina where you can go on Facebook just to hang out with other freak listeners and other freaks, or maybe even freaks who are so freaky they don't even listen to Two True Freaks. They just go there to talk to people who listen to Two True Freaks. I don't know. I don't study them people. But that's where they can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I have a website called geekygirlexperience.com, and I also write fanfiction, and I finally posted a new chapter of my Thrawn fanfiction for the first time since January last night. So I finally had time to finish the fucking chapter. So I finally posted it. It's up. It's there. I love it. I'm so happy about it. I'm so excited. So that's on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short. My name on there is Chaos Lydia. My Thrawn fanfiction is called Forces of Gravity. And I have a side project called The Lucky Leku, which is more Rebel space. And I'm actually planning a little project with Lucky Leku in July. So by the time this episode comes out, I'll be already working on my side project. Chris reminded me I need to ask you a question about that. But yeah, that's where you can find me. I had to look it up because I was like, oh man, I'm so excited for next week. It's the Zeb episode. I'm fucking excited about the Zeb episode. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, it's Protectors of Concord Dawn, which is fine. I was just like, oh, but it's not the Zeb episode. Oh. And we return to Mandalore next week, or sort of Mandalore, because it's Concord Dawn. I think if I remember correctly, this is the episode where we meet Finn Rao. If I remember correctly, I think it is. It's a Sabine episode. No, which I don't mean to sound so shitty about, because I do love Sabine episodes.
Well, don't take it out. Don't take it out on this episode, because it's not the Zebisode.
I was just excited because I was like, a Zeb episode next week, yeah! And I was like, oh, it's not the Zeb episode, but it's still a Sabine episode. We meet Finn Rao.
Don't let your disappointment control you.
Actually, I'm going to give you a little preview of when we do this. So, over on Tumblr, I do instant GIF reactions to episodes, and I started with season 2 of Rebels. And so as I was doing these, I would just write Finn, just like I would put R-A-W and then just like finger mash the keys. So expect that next week, because that's how I refer to him as. He's Finn. So you guys can look forward to that next week.
There you go. Row, row, row.
Row, 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 row. Bye, guys. Row, row, row.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Hunting.